Fossils and Fiction, a show about ancient life, paleontology, and the stories we tell. The show is produced by me, Travis Holland, on Wiradjuri country with the support of Charles Sturt University. Enjoy! Bronwyn Saunders is a Canberra-based author whose first book, Diprotodon, A Megafauna Journey, was published by CSIRO Publishing in 2023. Diprotodon was the largest ever marsupial. It lived during the Pleistocene and went extinct about 25,000 years ago. Diprotodon was very widespread, being known so far from Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, and South Australia. The book features a young Diprotodon journeying across the landscape and meeting other animals of his time. It is illustrated by Andrew Plant. We have a copy of Diprotodon to give away within 2 weeks of this episode being released. Check our Instagram for details. Here's author Bronwyn Saunders.
I'm honoured, Travis, to be here and to be involved in Fossils and Fiction and to add to the Science Communication Research Project at Charles Sturt University.
Oh, thank you so much, and welcome to the show. Now, you describe yourself as a citizen scientist and author. Yes. Tell me about how those two parts of your life fit.
Well, one kind of became necessary because of the other. So I found myself in needing a new profession, and I looked into writing and I followed that, and that's what I've been doing for the last 15 years. And then suddenly, after many years of trying, which we'll get to, I find that CSIRO want to publish me. And I look around and I'm like, I'm not a scientist. And tried to work out how I fitted. And citizen scientist is a good catch-all because it captures the interest. It embraces the idea of informing people and not educating, but informing people about megafauna and the passion and the where the book leads. And so that was an added on title because that's where I found myself.
No, that's really lovely. The notion, you know, people are not one thing. And so having multiple identities that fit together is really interesting. And figuring out a way for you that those do fit together with that sort of narrative or story part of it is lovely. Now, I invited you on because I wanted to have a chat about your book, Diprotodon, A Megafauna Journey, which I have a copy of here and is published by CSIRO Publishing. Yeah. They've very kindly supplied me with a copy to give away as well. So that'll be happening on my social media. If you've got a young person in your life who'd love to get access to this book.
Not just a young person.
No, well.
CSIROs have recommended, because I mean they need to, from 6 to 9. But I think between 2 and 200, if you didn't learn about it in school, because I didn't, then... You know, everyone needs to know about megafauna, especially Australian megafauna, because we're unique, of course.
So, I mean, that's kind of gets to the point. The megafauna are important. People want to know about them. You've already mentioned inspiring. Why Diprotodon? Why did you focus on Diprotodon for this?
Okay, well, this one, to go back a little bit.
Yeah, so, go for it.
I mentioned that I took up writing to begin a second career. Or prepare for a second career. And as part of that, my writers group that I'm a part of, we put in an Australian Arts Grant application, Australian Literary Arts Grant, sorry. Mm-hmm. And as part of that, we got a mentor, and the mentor that we had ended up being Sue Whiting, which was the first person we'd all gone to see, and that's how the group started. So it was kind of full circle that this person would be our mentor. And she kind of said, well, what's your passion project? And a couple of Christmases before, that's the other thing, I also market myself as the kid from Kalangadoo. And when I was a kid, we would go to the Narrecourt Caves because that's quite close to the Narrecourt Caves, and it was a thing to do and it sounded good. And, you know, you could do that annually. And so we did. My whole primary school, we would go there annually and see the caves. Now, having a wonderful experience and seeing Flinders University signs everywhere when I went, I knew that Flinders University was the best university in the whole wide world. No offence, Charles Sturt University. Anyway, so I was determined to go and study at Flinders University when I was finished high school. And lo and behold, I meet my future husband there, and I take said partner back to Kalangadoo to show him where I grew up because he's from New Zealand. His name's Rod. And I show him the Narrecourt Caves. But while I'm there, I notice how much has changed. And suddenly, megafauna exists. Now, there is a picture that I sent you that is I think it's titled The One That Started the Book. And that's the moment that I fell in love with the Diprotodon. So I took my husband and I learned about megafauna for the first time as an adult. I think I was engaged at the time to Rod, and I fell in love with that animal. It was amazing. And while I was there, though, we went on the tour, and to this day, I honestly believe that a tall tale was told by either me mishearing and or the person who was showing me through, but we won't point fingers because it's amazing and I love the Narrecourt Caves. So that's aside. And I actually thought the Diprotodon was carnivorous.
Oh, right.
And that's how I left. And that was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Yeah. Imagine being chased by this animal. And I'm giving the statue a big hug. And then I just was I had to find out everything about Diprotodons. Everything. So I started doing my own research. And then Sue says, what's your passion project? And I'd imagined a fiction story involving Diprotodon. Now I know is not carnivorous, but is a herbivore, which isn't disappointing. Much preferable, in fact. It's 150 kilos. Like, you know, that's a lot.
So Diprotodon is often described as a big wombat. It's not really a wombat, no. But I think that gives you a decent picture of what you can picture, right? And yeah. Of course, there's a lovely, several lovely drawings, but certainly on the front page of your book, and we'll share some of those photos you're talking about as well, so people can see those. What do you think it's important for kids to know about Australian megafauna? You said you grew up not knowing much about megafauna, and only as an adult did you really discover them.
As it turns out, my science advisor is Rod Wells on the book, and I went back after starting my passion project of Diprotodon, and went, what else do I need to read? And I was very fortunate, and Rod Wells had some time, and I've been in touch with him since I started researching the book. And he pointed me in the right direction as to what to read. And I was just, there was so much I didn't know, and it was all amazing. And it blew my mind how much I didn't know. And I'm like, you know, entire generations. I mean, he actually discovered it in, I think it's 76, right? Before I was born. And I don't know why we didn't know. It might have been because at that time, you know, the 80s, they were still trying to get like the Narrecourt Caves and the ones up in Queensland at the same time listed, World Heritage listed. And so I understand that it wasn't a part of the curriculum yet. But even through university, none of this came to light until after. And so there's, you know, generations of Australians who don't know about megafauna and the fact that we have awesome megafauna and they're amazing.
Yeah. We really do. There are some extraordinary, just like today, that there are extraordinary animals scattered throughout the Australian continent. The extinct animals here are often unique, and not very well known on the rest of the world stage, but they are really quite extraordinary animals. So when you mentioned it was discovered in the 80s, you mean the fossils in South Australia were discovered in the 80s?
So they were trying to get, you know, the World Heritage listing and that sort of stuff. So I understand that there are other places in, you know, I don't mean to be territorial.
No. I was just being, I was probably being a little bit territorial because the first ones were discovered a little just where I am on Wiradjuri country up the road in Wellington Caves. So, yes. but that was all the way back in the 1830s. So, but no, I just wanted to check. That's a really nice story though. And I think, you know, the origin of your book, being part of that natural personal discovering is what gives hopefully the story some of that resonance as well. And I think that's really nice. So without giving too much away, I guess, the young diprotodon in your book goes on a little journey of discovery, doesn't he, across the Australian
continent? Yeah, well, not so much the whole Australian continent, but it certainly looks like it in our drawings. But, I mean, diprotodons can travel as fast as a camel, up to 7 kilometres an hour. Like these big, I mean, this is an animal that we haven't introduced it properly. So it's 3 metres long, 2 metres tall, and is as big as a black rhinoceros, but as heavy as two of them. I mean, how does that happen? I don't get that. And diprotodon, you have to unpick the name because it's really special. Di meaning two, proto meaning first or front, and dont meaning tooth. First tooth. But this is a copy of diprotodon's front teeth. Do you think he's named after his front teeth? Come on, answer the question, Travis.
Do I think he's named after his front teeth? I'm going to say yes, but no.
This is one of my favourite things to do. And then I get to reveal the fact that it's got tusks in its lower jaw.
Ah, that's right, of course, which is very similar to other later marsupials like kangaroos, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just amazing. And, wow, I mean, how can you not get excited about that? And I have to correct you, Travis, I'm very sorry.
Yes.
You said it's like a big wombat. Yes, it kind of looks like a big wombat. But if you say it kind of looks like a big wombat, then you're stepping on the toes of the giant wombat. The scientists are so good at naming things. You know, we have a giant echidna and a giant. I mean, anyway, no offense. I didn't do the research. They're allowed to call it what they want. But so we already have a giant wombat. And we made a fairly distinct decision to not feature the giant wombat in the book. However, can I let you in on a little secret?
Yeah, please.
Yeah? Okay, in the book, so I'm holding the book. I'll show you the page in a second. I'm just finding the first page. So the first page in here, this animal is the only one that's not named. And you only get to know this if you talk to the author or the illustrator. This book, this animal here, so this is on like the
first
page. That animal is a giant wombat. But we chose not to reveal it because we didn't want to confuse people about diprotodon and the giant wombat because they're very separate animals. Professor Roderick Wells would like it known that no, a diprotodon is not a wombat. Yes.
No,
they're not generally related. I mean, we as humans like to class everything, and diprotodon is the big umbrella term for a lot of the animals and the family and all of that. And that's fine. but they're not wombats. Diprotodons are the end of their line. Okay. Now we have that fixed and I get a tick from Rod. Yeah.
So what was the research process that you went through? You've mentioned your scientific advisor a couple of times.
Yeah.
What, you know, because I think people might often look at children's books and think that they're just highly simplified. But in order to get to the point, in order to get to the essence of the information that you present for the kids, you do have to do a lot of research, of course. So what was that process like? I have
read every paper on a diprotodon that exists. I have translated the Latin and the Greek. I have just undone all of the knots and read and reread and processed and do as much work as you do. That's why I'm happy to call myself a citizen scientist, because I've earned the title. I may not have the degree, but I've certainly done the work. And it's not just simplifying the words, because if you don't use the actual term, you lose the essence if you oversimplify.
Mm.
So you need to keep things like crepuscular. You can have the word nocturnal, meaning nighttime. People know that. You're just introducing another term and you explain it. So it's about working out, okay, I think people and children are just little people. And, you know, they say dinosaur names better than we do.
That's often the extraordinary thing about kids. Like dinosaurs obviously are the key case study there is, yeah, they can say, you know, dinosaur names all day.
Yeah, every day. And read about
and
them.
So, yeah, and so the assumption that we should be, you know, oversimplifying things, mm-mm, you need to make it accessible, but it doesn't mean you strip all the detail out.
No, you don't strip out the detail. And it's working out what to put in and what to leave out. And I sometimes had to fight to keep words in. Like, no, this is really important for this reason. No, we need the word prehensile. And describing, you know, what prehensile is and it means to grab or hold on to.
Yeah.
So having an extra limb and getting the kids excited about it. So what I do is I translate it and I understand it and I write it in simple phrases that I understand, or what I like to call Bronwynese. So I have notes about all of the papers. So they're simplified so I get it. And if I can get it, if I've got it in Bronwynese, then I can turn it into a story. So I make it so I can understand it first. So not dumbing down, simplifying and explaining what's necessary. Yeah, and make it fun. I made my children and my husband go to Monarto Zoo so I could observe black rhinoceroses and see the white rhinos eating and record how it ate and how it moved. My poor children, we went on, because of course we were there for Christmas, so we went the day after Christmas on the hottest day of that year and the busiest day of Monarto Zoo. That's what authors do to their family to learn about topics that they're still trying to wrap their head around. And I still, when I was, you know, you're trying to get the movements and the sounds and how the lips move, and I've recorded a rhinoceros.
Yeah.
And that's what you do. And that's how you make it accessible to people. You make it accessible to you and you just start explaining it and sharing it. And I'm really fortunate because I get to present or have been able to present at the Australian National Botanic Gardens during their megafauna series.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are all the animals in the gardens. Oh, that's in July in Canberra every year. And it's amazing. And I get to present there and just excite children and scare adults.
We'll make sure we put some information about that in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
If people can get along in July and check that out, that'll be great. Now, so in addition to the diprotodons, you feature a sort of parade of other megafauna, the giant short-faced kangaroo, who I actually wrote about recently myself. There's a giant crocodile. You've got Thylacoleo, the so-called marsupial lion. Megalania, which is a sort of forerunner, I guess, to our large lizards nowadays, the goannas and whatnot. Yep. And the mihirungs, which are these sort of
large-ish
theropod birds.
Mihirungs?
Mihirungs. I only know that because I interviewed Adam Yates from the Museum of the Northern Territory several months ago, and he's a mihirung researcher, amongst other
things. Okay. So mihirungs. I just call them mirrorungs.
Okay. Look, I don't think anyone's going to pull you up.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. If I get something wrong and there's an adult around, I'm going to be corrected, particularly here in Canberra.
Well, now I'm second guessing my own pronunciation, though. So
that's okay. I figure I'm allowed to because I read it. I haven't heard it.
Absolutely. But why are all these creatures so interesting? Why this parade of other megafauna? You could have focused just on the diprotodons, but you threw them all in there.
Look, it's my illustrator. My illustrator is amazing. I just focused on the animal and the story and all of the wonderful pictured, unmentioned animals that are there. So the mihirungs were always there. Crocodile was the most amazing and awesome addition. How we got that there was just brilliant. But that's because of the perspective and understanding of what a picture book is and my illustrator, who has an amazing background. He's actually a zoologist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your illustrator is Andrew Plant, and Andrew, we're going to talk all about his art. Yeah, it's going to be a really good chat.
He wears so many hats. You have to tell me if he has more than one head, because he's a theatre director and crafter of the sets of theatres. He does painting. He does murals. He does teaching art at schools. He does his own books. He does so many things. He's amazing. I'm the fortunate one. I'm learning from all these people, you know, from my professor, Roderick Wells, from Andrew Plant. So I'm fortunate to be on this ride.
This is very similar, I guess, to the reasoning that I take into doing this whole show, really, is it's a good excuse just to talk to people and find out interesting things and the things that they're passionate about. Absolutely love it. So, Bronwyn, who else are some of your author inspirations?
I have a couple of examples here. So my mentor, Sue Whiting, I have to say, she has been amazing, and she's now my good friend as she's no longer doing editing. But that's okay. Everyone has to move on. But Sue Whiting will always be the biggest influence. I must say that I have originally envisaged that the Protodon would look more like this. This is a Walker Books book. Mm-hmm. And what you have here with Desert Lake is the facts and the story together, and they're in different fonts so you can tell them apart. And that's how I originally wrote Diprotodon. So I imagined that it would look like this, and rather than how it does. I must say, CSIRO have done an amazing job and have done the topic so much justice that I'm so glad they're my publisher. But this is what, I mean, this was the biggest influence when I originally started writing the Protodon.
So that's Desert Lake. Who's the author and the illustrator on that one?
Pamela Freeman. And yeah. Okay. And the other one, I must say, the other two, because it's fossils and fiction. This was one of my alternative. I came across this after I'd finished writing to Protodon, but Elisa Darlinson is, as you asked, who were my influences and that sort of thing in terms of writers. Elisa, definitely. But with the way I thought I might have to do it.
For anyone who's just getting the audio, that's Stripes in the Forest by Elise Darlinson. Yeah, no, and it's about the thylacine, of course. That's all right.
Yeah. And this one's Circle by Jeannie Barker.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jeannie was important because I wasn't sure how Diprotodon might end up looking, and she does photographic murals in her pictures. And I've been very lucky to see here in Canberra a display of how she takes the photos of these huge collages that she makes. And I was like, okay, that's something I can do because I'm not that talented with a pencil, not knowing what picture book does and how they do it and all of the publishing side of things. So you have to go through the whole process. And you're like, well, what if I had to do it myself? Jeannie Barker was definitely an influence and is one of my favourite. This book is about the navigation of particular birds and the migration. Yeah.
I think birds are a really nice introduction to watching wildlife because they're so widespread.
Absolutely.
There's so many of them and you can watch them all day. So I'm really getting into bird watching lately, actually. It's I can't say it's snuck up on me, but it's come from listening to another of my recent favorite podcasts called Death by Birding. I recommend that one to people as well.
Yeah, but not the start of it. Don't die.
Now, without giving, I guess, away any trade secrets, are there any other prehistoric topics you'd like to tackle in a book for kids? If you can't give it away, that's okay. Yes.
All of them.
Okay. All of them.
I have a list and I'm working on one which I can't reveal because it's confidential information. I'm sorry.
In general, I guess you'd like to stick with Australian
animals. Yes, but that doesn't mean I'm also dabbling in some fiction titles as well and ogres. You know, as you do, because I'm sorry, you can't read too many papers about it. Yep. Research can sometimes need an outlet, which is not research.
Yeah, absolutely. We will put your website or your Facebook page in the show notes so people can follow your career and look forward to the next book, whatever it happens to be. Diprotodon, A Megafauna Journey is a really lovely book. And as I say, we do have a copy to give away. So as this episode comes out, you'll be able to jump on my Instagram page at Fossils and Fiction and figure out how best to get your hands on that copy.
Do meet the winner and you meet me, I'm happy to sign your book and tell me that you want it.
There we go. Thank you so much, Bronwyn. This has been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
And thanks so much to Bronwyn for that fascinating interview about her journey in the creation of Diprotodon, A Megafauna Journey. Look out for the giveaway over on our Instagram page and a future interview with illustrator Andrew Plant. Thanks for listening. Find more info on the web at fossilsfiction.co and across social media. Follow and rate us on your favourite podcasting platform. If you have a story to share on the podcast, please get in touch. The theme music is Sonora by Lucas Moreno.